Great, we failed today.
Right? Like now we're, you know what I mean? Like
I'm a shingles expert. And they're like, you mean like a doctor? And I'm like, no.
It's really fun to connect the dots looking back.
You're listening to the Roofing Success Podcast, a show created to inspire roofing contractors to achieve optimal success in their roofing businesses. I'm the host, Jim Aline, the co-author of the books Internet Marketing for Roofing Contractors and The Best Known Roofer. I'm also the co-founder of Roofer Marketers, the leading digital marketing agency for the roofing industry. On each episode, I sit down with industry leaders to talk about their processes, the lessons they've learned, and how to find success in roofing.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Roofing Success Podcast. Today, we have my friend John Cenac, the Roof Pro. We've had lots of good conversations. We've got to spend a good amount of time together recently over the last month or so. John, it's been fun.
Yes, we have. It's been a blast to have that time outside of just conferences, like to add the other event in Colorado together to really have some time to chat. Lots of fun, man. It was good to see you.
Fellow coach in the Pitch Pro movement. Loving the value add, right? Like adding value to people's lives is really what you've done through your expertise. Like it's been amazing to watch.
It's been an interesting run in 2 years' time, really, just to see what that happens. But I talk about the service mindset, and when you kind of take that mindset into, you know, how can I serve? What's the service this person needs, the homeowner needs, the construction company needs, the roofing company needs? And when you focus on those things, it becomes not selfish in that moment, and you get a lot more value transferred into those individuals. And you know, it's great to see that they have skills or something that I've shared that they can then apply, and it turns into growth, more revenue, more jobs, whatever it may be. And that's just, it's humbling. It's exciting and it's humbling.
And it's crazy that this love of shingles is what, like, how do we put it, John? Like, how do we explain this to people? How do people, like, your love of asphalt shingles is what led you here.
it is. You know, I had a Facebook group with 1,200 people in it asking what shingle this is. And I knew I was obsessed with it. I'd been collecting that data for years. And just even my wife was like, are you sure you should be doing this? Like, is this worth your time? As people were shipping me shingles and I was writing the first NTS reports and all this other stuff. And I think there was a fair amount of people that probably looked at it like, this person's crazy. You know, my wife sure didn't like the granules, but I loved it. I was geeking out on the details, and slingshot that forward. You look at that and just that obsession with that thing, that activity, the desire to be great at it, the desire to know it more, the desire to master that knowledge of those particular products, and where that's catapulted to me today. You know, everything else is a byproduct of being great at that. And the, you know, the revenue is a byproduct of it, the reputation, the recognition, the people that follow me, all that stuff is a byproduct. And it's crazy. I just, we know from the roofing industry what we're talking about, but to sit next to like a perfect stranger on a plane and they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm a shingles expert. And they're like, you mean like a doctor? And I'm like, no, not at all. The better kind, I don't feel like the medical shingles is a good thing, but it's what I mastered. It's what my skill set was. And to think that translated into a group with now 25,000 people, being able to coach and train across the entire country, all slingshotted from a group and a small class that started as the Discontinued Shingles Masterclass.
Yeah. It's amazing, man. But this is what one of the conversations that we had, and you did a presentation on this at the Pitch Pro Movement in October. And it was like mastering your craft. It's something that I think gets missed a lot. Everyone, we're in this easy button. We're really in the easy button life, right? We want the easy button. We want one day shipping. We want easy. We want people chase the next best thing, right? The next quick win. You know, some of those things that have come into roofing over time, you know, solar, right? Like, let's just add solar and you'll get to here. Or just hire a bunch of salespeople and you'll get to here. Or do this and you'll get to here. And it's these easy buttons along the way that get put in front of us. And it's so, so tempting as a business owner to go, man, please make this easier for me. Right?
It's tempting and it's a little disingenuous. And I can't fault, you know, there's a couple of things that drive that. I think one is the ever-changing landscape of technology and everything that continues to enter the roofing space, you know, the tools that we have access to and the technology that we have access to now. But I also think there's a little bit of a weak mindset that is broadcasted, I'll say, for lack of a better word. Essentially this idea that don't worry, you'll find something you love one day, you know, just keep going. You'll do the thing you love, find the thing you love, just focus on the thing you love. And I think that it lacks understanding the passion behind that. Mm. And if you don't take time in the role you're in now and commit to it, if you don't take time in the role you're in, whether that be production, sales, you know, this is roofing related. I've studied this well outside of roofing, but production, sales, growth, culture, you know, like what's the thing an owner should do? That was a big one for me. Like owners do so many things, but is it the thing they're great at? And can they truly be passionate about it? And if you don't have some level of commitment to that and passion to that and love behind it, if you don't learn to love what you do, I think you end up lost always hoping to find something you love. And I committed myself to that when that group started growing, like I already used the knowledge to help improve how I sold, how I educated homeowners, how I would win those insurance claims from repair to replacement. So I already had a understanding of it, but it was now I've got to teach myself to just be obsessed with it, to love it, to be passionate about it. And when I did, the reward I got from that was great. Now that could have catapulted into the next thing that I want to do, sure, but it actually catapulted into something great within, I mean, a very, very, very short period of time, because I didn't live in the world of always looking to the future of maybe one day I'll find something I love and can get behind. I just got behind the thing I was doing and realized, yeah, I learned to love it, and that rewarded me instantly.
That along with, I'm going to add something to that. It was that along with your willingness to share it.
Yes.
Right. That was another aspect of it, is when you learn something and then you share it, there's something magical that happens.
Yes. I think that that ties back to something else I find very consistent with people that are great, that are masters at what they do, that are great at what they do. And at some point, a lot of them, short of kind of the one personality types that's very isolated, there's people that are great in that personality category too, but a lot of them have figured out not how to just be successful themselves, but how to create success, how to breed success, how to create success in others. And they get a lot of gratification out of that. And for years, I would post something on Facebook, I'd respond to somebody's request, and then 2 weeks, 30 days later, you'd see someone say, thanks to what John Cenac sent me, thanks to this, I was able to do that. And I look at it now, I just got done meeting with Fraser Roofing, and they have an individual in their roofing company who has just been dedicated to the steps. Like, I'm going to do these steps, and if I just follow these steps, what is that going to look like? And listening to him in that meeting say, well, did you do this? And did you do this? Did you do this? Well, we did this, this, and this, and this is how it all panned out. And you realize that he has become a steward to that. And when he sat down at dinner and told us how much that has changed his life, I realized that he's not only sat in the class, he has been obsessed with this thing. Mm-hmm. And now success is very visible in this particular individual, to where now his company looks at him as the specialist within the company when it comes to shingles and when it comes to that repair and replace argument. They kind of go to him first. And seeing that happen, I think anybody out there that is successful, when you can reach your hand out and serve somebody else and create success in somebody else, and there's a gratification to that. And it becomes this multiple and almost this culture that exists within your company, where the first thing you want to do is see everybody else be successful. And it just builds this massive rising tides mindset in your company when you learn how to breed success, how to create success in others.
That's been a big thing. We're probably pushing like episode 180, 185 here as somewhere in there as we talk. And there's been two big things with the contractors that I've interviewed on the show that have really stood out to me. One is an obsession with the customer, making sure that they are going to do things better than the next contractor. They're going to take care of everything that goes wrong. They're going to make it everything right. They're going to do everything right. They're going to install the best materials. They're going to do the best, provide the best workmanship. They have an obsession with providing the best product and service to the customer. The other aspect of it, once they get that dialed in, there always seems to be this next level of that next thing that comes across their plate, like the next mission, right? Like they leveled up, boop, 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 right? Like now we're, you know what I mean? Like we just made it to the next level. And the next level is how many people in your team can you make better, right? And those are those conversations. It's amazing. But I think, you know, first you have to do it yourself, right? You have to master your craft yourself. Then you get to pass that on. So, man, let's start with talking about owners, right? Like, and kind of what they do, what your thoughts on, you know, the successful owners that you've been, you know, been around and been in contact with, and the ones that are struggling, and what do you see the successful owners doing?
Sure. There's some common trends out there. You know, I've already mentioned, I think that roofing company owners, especially at the start, bite off more than they can chew. They're wearing multiple hats. They're playing a lot of roles. And I understand that that's partially a financial move at that point, because it's not like we can hire $250,000 of salary right away and just say, you know, let's hope that this is all works out and we can sell into what we're paying for. So I can understand that. But the sooner you get to pass those hats off and understanding which is the best hat for you to wear as an owner is important. So you gave a great example. There's owners out there that are great at customer service and customer experience and interacting with customers. And there are owners that frankly should never talk to a homeowner. Okay. And that's very, very true. Okay. But the ones that, you know, realize, okay, I'm great at the customer service piece and I kind of always want to be around that experience. That means they need to start taking everything else off their plate. They need to start taking off production, administrative, supplementing, estimate writing, all of the minutiae that drags down their ability to understand the life and life cycle of their customer, to where they can tune that in and understand. And those people have that: when my homeowner wins, when my customer wins, everyone wins. I win, you know, my salesperson wins, I win, manufacturing wins, supply, everybody wins up the food chain from that point, because they have that dedication, that obsession to it. I know owners who are the complete opposite, who shouldn't talk to homeowners at all. And they are really good at the logistics. They're really good at production. They're really good at showing up and checking the jobs and making sure that nothing goes awry. And that's perfectly fine. Hire somebody for inside sales to help manage the customer experience. That's one example to give. Now, there's a few different scenarios of how to continually manage that customer experience. But the bottom line is, the owners that I've seen that are great, once they start hitting certain benchmarks, million, 3 million, 5 million, they recognize it's time to take a hat off. And people that are great, people that are masters at their craft, realize if I'm going to be obsessed with one thing and do this one thing and do it so well that nobody else can do it better than me, they have to stop doing everything else that's distracting, slowing them down, messing things up, limiting their ability to be great at that one thing. So whether the owner is great at their own culture, recruiting, hiring. I know an owner great at recruiting, should not be managing jobs. You know, it's a distraction to him. Just keep managing your people. Keep breeding success in your people and understand that when your people win, you win. So the realization of when to take the hat off is crucial. And people that are great understand, hey, at some point I got to take this hat off, then this hat off, then this hat off. And this is the only one I want to leave on and the only one I should leave on.
One of the things that I've said recently is owner is not on an org chart.
So true.
Right? There is no org chart with owner. And, you know, when we get into like, you know, I talk a lot about EOS and the entrepreneur operating system. And one of the first things you do there is the accountability chart. And in that accountability chart, you're laying out all of the seats for your business.
Correct.
You're not laying out who's in the seats. It's just what you will need to run your business. Once you get those seats lined out, then you put the people's names in it that they are, who are responsible for those roles. And a lot of times your name as the owner goes in a lot of those boxes, especially early on. And I think this Correct. Is, this is kind of to go along with what you're saying. In those boxes though, a lot of times CEO is where the owner ends up, right? Or I was listening to a podcast recently. I think it was and they were talking about, but it, do you really want to do the duties of a CEO? And I think this is a kind of along the same line with what you're talking about. It's like, what do you want to do every day? You can be an owner of the company and be the sales manager.
Exactly. You know, you we use EOS.
Yeah.
We use EOS within NTS, and it's a lot of abbreviations in there in one sentence. But, you know, when we mapped out those seats, we knew that like we didn't have the people for those seats when we mapped it out. But understanding that there were seats to be filled and eventually our names were going to come out of those chairs, you know, we knew there was a point where I wasn't going to be able to write the NTS reports. But in the creation of that baby and understanding the feedback that was coming, I wrote those reports. Then eventually I stopped writing them. Then eventually, after someone else was writing them, I screened all of them. Then eventually I stopped screening them. You know, like it's just the smallest little piece of that, because where is my time best invested in NTS and what am I truly great at? It's the shingle knowledge. The second I stop letting that shingle knowledge be sharp because I'm so distracted by writing reports, reviewing reports, and things like that, we lose our entire foundation, the thing that really gave us the gift to launch that. And that's not where we want to be. So it was understanding having an expert to review them. So we trained an expert to do the audit. So then having a general manager, then having, right? So who was going to create the new report templates, right? So then an admin, and we built all those in. So I could not agree with you more that if you are great at something, it doesn't matter which seat it is, that's fine. But you bring up an even better point. Recognize that as an owner, you don't have to be on the org chart. There may be a time where you've handed out all your hats and what you really get is a byproduct of your ability to create that company, to create that role. It's now just this moving piece and you're looking at it at 30,000 feet instead of 10,000 feet.
And that's a skill set, right?
It is.
Building a business, hiring, training, developing SOPs, put the process, like all of that's a skill set. So if you have that skill set, you may end up over here. If you don't, like you had mentioned, like if your skill set is on the production side and you are really good at your craft and you really are good at being out at job sites, making sure things get done right, man, you like focusing on that. So back to kind of the what we've been, to tie it back into what we're talking about or what you presented at the Pitch Pro Movement, it was about mastering your craft. And I think that to tie that together a little bit, it's understand yourself, understand what you're good at, what you enjoy doing, and then go deep on that. Is that where I'm trying to connect the dots here from
100%, right? Like there. So the first step you have to do is as you are trying to figure out hats and seats and everything else, right? As you go through that, you need to start understanding you. Okay. Within that, you're probably in a role at some point as a roofing company owner of just gross imbalance. You have no balance in your life. Yeah. You're doing all these things. And once you understand yourself and you start handing off those hats, because this is the thing I can get on board with, this is the role that I can be passionate about, that I can deep dive into, that I can be in love with, you find yourself realizing that these things should click at some point. Time is your greatest currency, and opportunity cost is your greatest expense. Mm. That's very true for a lot of these individuals who they realize that at some point. So I've understand this about myself. Here's the thing that I'm good at. Here's the thing that I want to do. I've learned this about myself. I've learned I shouldn't talk to homeowners. I should only work with my employees or whatever it may be, right? Then realizing how to apply that. So it's understanding the balance of your time and your energy, and then what you are putting your effort into, is it a good opportunity? And then is that costing you other opportunities because you have no time to do that other thing or you can't go pursue that other opportunity? So the balance of time and opportunity in that situation is crucial. And when you understand, you can't balance that until you understand yourself. All these owners that I've studied, and it's been owners inside roofing, outside of roofing, plumbing, HVAC, electrical, plastics manufacturing, AI, small tool inventions, things like just engineers, people that are great. Like, this is very true. At some point, to balance their life, they had to learn themselves. And once they learn themselves, I'm going to apply this and I'm going to do this. And then you're more tuned into your time and opportunity assessments on everything because you realize, like, that's a good opportunity. Let me put somebody on that task because that's not good for me. That's not good use of my time, or just that's not a good opportunity for anybody. We're not going to hire a role for that. We're not going to assign somebody that. I'm not going to do it. We're just going to let that opportunity pass by. So very, very true, very consistent with people that are masters, people that are great. They start achieving that balance and it gets off skew, right? As you get into deeper things and you add it and you build it and you grow it, it gets a little off kilter again. Sure. But you understand time is your greatest currency and opportunity cost is your greatest expense.
How, you were a roofing salesperson. Mm-hmm. How did you get to the point where you were like, this is the craft I want to master, not the sales aspect, not that you weren't a great salesperson because you are.
Sure.
But where, like, how did you get that self-awareness? How did you learn that I want to master this?
So, I already mentioned briefly that at some point you have to really love the role you're in. And when I found myself in the roofing industry and in selling and then becoming a sales manager, what I got distracted by was what's next? What's next? I want to keep growing. I want to keep moving. I want the bigger paycheck. I want the bigger job. I want the bigger role. I want to be the executive. I want to be the second in command next to the owner, right? So I was looking two steps, three steps out ahead of me instead of just like a close future. And I had no real ability to immerse myself in that sales role and be great at it. When I immersed myself in that sales role, so the first thing I did to really start learning me was just commit to the role. Like, I'm just going to be obsessed with this. So that's when I started watching everybody. That's when I was watching Adam's videos and a bunch of other people that do selling tips on YouTube and things like that. And that's where I really started kind of getting engrossed in Adam, Roof Strategist, right? And understanding various different people out there. I was watching people like Alina with Estimate Mastery Now. It was Xactimate Mastery at the time, but just, I was watching people that as I tuned into them, I was like, they're really good at this. It's clear they're really good at this. And I knew the thing I had to do as I was, because I was a cradle to grave salesperson, which means for those of you in the roofing industry, probably already know, we did everything. We sold the job. We supplemented the job. We estimated the job. We went to our own production, you know, so I understood cradle to grave. And as I looked to move through other companies and work with other companies, I knew the things I wanted to get rid of. I didn't want to do orders. I didn't want to do production. I didn't want to, because I committed my focus to just being great at selling. Then I had this little obsession about, you know what? Part of selling is winning more of these claims. So I have to understand supplementing and estimating. And I realized that, well, I've already kind of taught myself how to immerse myself in something. And after knowing that, I was like, let me immerse myself in this piece that I think is underutilized, which is shingle knowledge. So I was out there installing with the crews, learning how to put the roof together, learning every little piece so I could talk about it with adjusters, then learning everything about every product that existed. Because in 2016, I had a designer one that came back discontinued and an engineer came out. And I thought for sure that was going to be the attempt on denial. And in the conversation with that engineer, he agreed that there was wind damage on the roof. And I said, well, and this was the scariest roof I'd climbed in my life. It was 14, 12 pitch. To that point, it was like the worst of the worst, right? And I said, well, we can keep looking, but what if I told you they don't make this anymore? He goes, how do you know that? Get down. We go to my truck. I show him all the specs, the date, the letter from the manufacturer at the time. He goes back up. We pull a shingle off, flip it over, meets the specs perfectly, has the manufacturer's logos on the back. He tells the adjuster, I think I have everything I need. 2 weeks later, fully approved. And that's when it clicked. It was like, this is the thing I've got to figure out and get really, really good at. I didn't realize at the time that the byproduct was going to be not just for me and my team and teaching my team those things, that it was going to be this global byproduct of NTS. But what I had already learned at that point was to immerse myself in something and to really fall in love with it. And that's when I learned me. And then when the shingle thing hit, I saw all this turmoil in the Facebook groups. Every Facebook group, someone would be like, what shingle is this? And people would just crap on them. Like sometimes, like, you should know your stuff. You should know this. And I'm like, that's not a common one for people to know. And I realized, like, I'm the only one that knows all these answers. So we took this group and said, look, if you have shingle questions, come to this nice safe space. And then that just went, because I'd already immersed myself in it. Because I knew my makeup. Like, this was a geeky thing that I liked. And then when someone came to me and said, we should create a new shingle reporting system, and you seem to be the guy with the knowledge, it was like, I actually do have all of that data. So cool, let's do it.
So here's what I've heard out of there. So this is one of my favorite things, though, is that it's really fun to connect the dots looking back, right? But it's impossible to connect the dots looking forward, right? So you kind of, it's that Bruce Lee flow like water, right? You just kind of go, you have to go where it takes you, right? You went where the path took you, but it was an inquisitive nature, and you learned how to identify. And I don't know if you learned how to identify, but you identified gaps in knowledge that would increase your skill set to better your performance.
My team's performance.
And your team's performance, right? And so I think that's a skill set that I don't know if a lot of people pay attention to. Deshaun talks about it a lot, man. Start, stop, continue. He talks about that start, stop, continue. Like, what should I start doing? What do I need to start doing? What do I need to stop doing? And what can I continue doing? Right. And if we take these bits in time where you're selling roofs and like, man, how do I get more claims approved? Well, I need to start learning more about shingles. I need to start learning more about the insurance process. I need to stop, you know, whatever. And I need to continue doing this. Like, you learn this, you can identify these gaps of where you need to fill with the knowledge that you need. But the other part you said there is you learn to learn, or it became fun to learn. It's not fun to sit in a classroom, at least it wasn't for me. I was a terrible student all the way through everything. Like, I was really bad. But it was because I didn't want to learn what was being taught, right? Like, I didn't, you know, now if I find something that I enjoy, boy, I get to go down that, you know, and really get to, you know, learn and embrace it. And so learning to learn. I want to dig into that just a little bit. How can people learn to learn better? Like, first, how do they identify what they need to learn? And then what are the ways that some tips that you've used along the way? Like, is it just books? Are you YouTube? How do we learn this stuff and get better?
So I'm going to recap something you said just because I don't want to glaze over it. You know, you mentioned the whole idea of bettering my process, bettering my wins, bettering my team's wins. It goes back to that time and opportunity. Mm. I basically had statistics that said I could go spend time knocking doors anywhere, or I could focus that based on the shingle knowledge that I have to go knock this type of door, knowing that it was the best opportunity, right? Like, again, learning me and learning the time and opportunity balance, I was able to use just simple geeky data to do that. So very, very, very true. So one of the things that I think people need to realize is I'd almost categorize how you learn, how you absorb information. Is it being next to the person? Is it hands-on? Is it listening? Is it visual? Is it, you know, what it, what, you have to identify what's best for you. I'm the world's slowest reader. It's how I learn the least.
Me too.
I have to be super passionate about that topic to really get through it. Most books that I read, I listen to on audio and then it hits and I'm like, now I can read this thing because I know that I'm engrossed with this thing. My brother, for the longest time, I'm gonna use him as an example here. His spelling was weak, and it's one of two brothers, but his spelling was weak and his grammar was weak to the point where basic words that the average person would write in a sentence, he may not spell perfectly. So reading was a struggle for him. It just wasn't what he was great at. But he drives through the night, and he works for a company where he drives the night. So he started going to audiobooks. He's listened to more audiobooks than our entire family has read combined in his career. Very, very, and it's changed his intellect level. But he realized, I don't learn this way, I learn this way. So my first caution is understand the best ways you learn. So for me, it was visual, right? Like if I could watch something, that's great. If I could go do it hands-on, even better, which is why I was putting on roofs, just to understand that's how that piece goes in. That's how they get the flashing in. That's how they do this. So when I explain it to an adjuster, it's not based on theoretical. I've actually seen it and now I can explain it better because I had to see it to explain it. So understanding how you learn is step one. And if you haven't learned that about yourself, figure out how you retain information the best, whether that's a classroom, whether that's visual, whether that's listening, whether that's reading, whether that's shadowing. If it's shadowing, go to that person. You know, the amount of times in my career, I was like, hey, can I come follow you? Hey, can we get on a call? And I was living networking at events just to make more connections so I could just absorb from those people or go do things with those people to get better at it. And so I understood a few things about myself and I understand what I was already, you said Deshaun.
Yeah.
What do I want to stop? What do I want to start? What do I want to continue? I understood that I was getting really good at selling and I wanted to continue that. I understood that I wanted to stop dealing with production issues because of the things that was giving me the least amount of reward. I was spending X time there, but it wasn't changing the bottom dollar for me. It wasn't increasing my opportunity. It was actually taking away from it. So start, stop, continue, right? So I knew I wanted to continue selling. I knew I wanted to stop dealing with production, but I knew I wanted to find a way to navigate some of these ones that we weren't currently winning on. And I knew there was a way to get there. So that's had to be my focus. So I put all my energy into learning this very, very unique, specialized thing that I thought was underutilized. The information was out there and I was like, there has to be more. It took winning that claim and someone saying to me, hey, yeah, that shingle's discontinued. My supplier, that one's discontinued. And then seeing the end result of that, I don't know how soon I would have learned that that was the opportunity. That was the piece I had to focus if I hadn't had that particular claim. So the last part is being attentive to the opportunity, right? Realizing that, okay, hi, I'm the red flag here. I'm waving in your face, pay attention to me. And okay, there's more to be gained from this particular thing. Let me do that. Let me learn more. Let me read more. Let me watch more. Let me go follow somebody. Let me go to that class, whatever it may be.
When does it end, John? When do you know enough? Where's the finish line?
It doesn't.
How do we get to the finish line on this?
So I think there has to be a win.
We have to just, where's your easy button, John? You're saying this is going to last forever.
So here's the, I'll give you for my particular scenario, but then let's look at this on my level and let's look at this on a global level. On my level, the more we can get my brain into a computer, okay? And as we look to get my brain into a computer for AI, right? The ability to do that. Every new product that comes out, once we develop that, we can continue to put the new products in there, which alleviates my need to learn every single shingle moving forward. Now, that's me. So there is a stopping point, sure, that we think we've identified and we're developing. But on a global level, I think anybody that's a master of their craft, when you look at somebody that's great, I guarantee you, you know, if you looked at, let's look at an athlete, let's look at two athletes. Let's look at Jerry Rice and Kobe Bryant. Okay. At no point in their career did they ever stop training. None. right? Somebody who's truly great at what they do never stops being a student. So when we finished putting everything into AI, I'm just going to say, what's the next thing I want to master? It's just like when I felt like I had achieved everything I needed to achieve from a selling standpoint, now I needed to understand how to get these tough ones approved, I switched my focus. So they're always a student. Another big transition that we went through, back to this. There's no finish line though. The difference, we compare ourselves to athletes a lot. And this is where I had to take that athlete's concept into mastering your craft, into owners, people that invented stuff, people that built tech and software and all this stuff. There's no finish line really. That's very finite. That's very limited. That's very small. If all you're looking for is a finish line, I think that you have a limited amount of areas you're going to find that in business, right? Business has very few finite rules, okay? Like players can come and go, right? A company could open tomorrow. A company could close tomorrow. If you're a roofing company in Indiana, which is where I'm at, and you go out of business, I don't win. Like I didn't win because you went out of business. The players just changed. We lost a player, we gained a player, whatever it may be. So this viewer concept of a finish line isn't real. NTS, if another product comes on the market to identify shingles, NTS doesn't automatically lose because another player entered. Now there's more competition. And maybe they've got a more innovative way to do it that drives the other two, ITIL and NTS, to do things differently. And one of the carriers has their own internal identification process. So I see where this trend is going. What was once a massive monopoly is going to be just continually broke down into what is the service that meets the need of each individual carrier, client, contractor, whoever it may be. That game is infinite. It seemed finite when it was a monopoly, and it seemed like there were very strict rules on it when it was a monopoly, but it's not that anymore. And I got to learn that firsthand as we developed NTS, that there is no finish line. I may develop the AI and there'll be a completely different change on how that demand is, but at least I'll have data and technology, which will change the entire game and what we could use, how we use it, and how we apply it. But there's no finish line. And the challenging question I give to roofing company owners and salespersons is, who won the Roof Bowl last year? The National Roofing Championship. I don't give out an award for that. In fact, we've seen some great large roofing companies fail. Absolutely fail. Did anybody be like, yep, we won now because that one failed? No, it's not finite. It's the infinite game of business, and it is an infinite game. And the goal is to continue to perpetuate that game. My goal in NTS is to continue to perpetuate the game of shingle identification. And if players enter, great. That just means all we've done is continue to perpetuate that game.
So now, I think when there's no finish line, it becomes challenging. There's a guy that I used to coach who was in the Army in the digital marketing agency space. Shout out Wes Foster. Wes was in the Army. In the Army, they would do what are known as unknown distance ruck marches.
Yeah,
and I thought that this was a great analogy for kind of what, you know, the way that business works a lot of times is that you throw your pack on and you start walking and you don't know when you're going to stop to take a sip, a drink of water. You don't know when you're going to, you know, if you're going to have a chance to stop and eat. You don't know when how long this is going to last, but the mentality that it will not, that you're in it and you're just going to put one foot in front of the other is what makes it wonderful. Right. And so, but how, you know, that's kind of the broad strokes, right? That's the macro view on it, but how maybe in the, as we move along, we do need maybe some milestones that we can say we're going in the right direction, right? We need that reflection point. So if you're feeling overwhelmed with the statement of there's no finish line, learn to develop the milestones that show you that you're moving in the right direction.
So there's two angles to talk about this. One is the angle that people that are masters that are great at what they do, they understand two concepts that kind of feed what you just said. One is to celebrate gains, to celebrate momentum. They're very much momentum focused and not finish line focused. And that's where the milestones, the objectives, the goals, things yeah. like that come into play. But they also got rid of their fear of failure and have a very, very high level of respect of failure and what failure and challenges mean to changing the mousetrap and building it better and going back to the drawing board or changing a piece of it in there. So I'm whichever one you want to talk about first, I think that those feed directly into what you just said. Sure, there's no finish line, but you got to celebrate. So you have to have something that you're like, but we did this. And I also That's don't right. care if this happens. So which angle you want to talk about first, Jim?
Let's talk about the milestones first, right? Like, let's talk about those wins, and then let's talk sure. about the getting rid of that fear of failure. Especially in the era of social media, we need to get rid of that fear of failure, I think. So let's talk about yes. wins. How do we get those wins Even in more place? So. How do we say, okay, we are moving in the right direction. We're getting better. We're getting sure. better.
I'm going to use the salesperson analogy for this one. This is probably my favorite one just because it's one that's near and dear to me that I experienced myself. I think every salesperson out there, whether your goals are based on setting them in March, like before a storm season, or if they're annual goals or whatever it may be, first year from the day you're hired, whatever the goal may be, let's just say that you have a year benchmark on a goal and you say, hey, I want to sell 1 million by the time that year mark comes around. And you're 2 months away from the year mark and you've sold 650,000. Statistically, you are not going to make it, right? Like statistics would say that. So you've set this finish line, this goal that you want to hit for the year, and you're not going to make it. The shift to momentum happens here. I know statistically, if you sell 6 jobs at 15,000 per month, you're going to sell 1,080,000 in a year, right? So it's pretty simple. 6 jobs a month. Let's use that as a basis. Maybe you're down because you didn't sell enough jobs. Maybe you're down because the jobs didn't have a high enough number. There's a lot of reasons you can look at it, but you have to find something in there to have momentum. So I would take this and say, hey, you know, Jim, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go out and just this week alone, all I want you to do is make sure you get one sale. Just go get one, okay? Or go get two, right? Go get two. Let's use that analogy. Go get two. You go out, you get two, okay? You could bring those two back to me. I celebrate it. Good job, man. Do it again next week. You go out the next week, you get two. You come back to me, I'm like, awesome. 2 weeks in a row, just like that. Go out and do it one more week in a row. You come back, you give me two more. I say, perfect. Kudos to you. Good job. Go back out one more time and get me two. You come back and in a month's time frame, you have 8 instead of 6. Because what we did was we took this massive $1 million goal that required 6 per month at 15,000 to get you to 1,080,000. And we said, what's the momentum we can celebrate? We'll just get the two contracts. Yeah. Let's not even look at the number. Let's not look at if they're 13,000, 15,000, 18,000, whatever. Let's just celebrate the activity. Let's get the momentum going. And then from there, we can start saying, what do we need to change next? The momentum exists. So look, you got 8 instead of 6. Great job. I'm going to do this for you. Here's this kicker. Here's this incentive, whatever it may be. By the way, these are all slightly below the $15,000 average, Jim. It seems to be where you like to work. So let's go out and let's find you a neighborhood that has houses, homes, roofs that are slightly above and try that area too. And I want you to get me two of your normal ones and one that's above your average. Now we're going for 3 because you could get 2. Now we're back to momentum. And we just keep rolling that momentum forward. Roll it forward, roll it forward, roll it forward, roll it forward, roll it forward. And it's amazing how well the momentum applies, whether that's a sales aspect or running the company, whatever it may be. You can look at your company and say, we're not there as a whole company. But what is the momentum or the small short-term target. So when you have a problem with long-term goals, figure out how you can celebrate short-term momentum. It makes a big difference in the success that you'll see in your company.
I love that. The short-term momentum. Here's what I think a lot of times we don't understand is the effort that it takes to get to that goal, right? Like we set these goals and see other companies hitting it, and we're moving in that direction. We go, man, but we don't see the work that goes in. Once you get that momentum, once that my goodness, that just expands and expands and expands and expands. It's the snowball down the hill, right? Like, it's just all of a sudden this thing is, nothing is stopping it. So I love that. How do we use failure to continue to move us forward?
Sure. That's a good one. I think there's a big difference in the people that I've studied between fearing failure and just not liking it, right? I think there's a healthy respect for failure. You don't like it. You don't want it to happen, but you have a healthy respect for it. And there's people that fear it. And I think that that it can be crippling from a fear standpoint. You know, one of the things that I was afraid of when I was selling was I was afraid I wasn't going to hit the next milestone. I was afraid I wasn't going to become the next position up. I wasn't going to rise to the thing. And when I stopped fearing that and realized, like, you know, like, this is, I'm not going to fail. Like, I'm not worried about it. I've got to focus and immerse myself in this thing and deal with all the speed bumps and bruises and learning curves out there. But a quote from an individual here in my town, he started a handful of companies, invested in them, built them up, sold them off. One was a greeting cards company that he sold to Hallmark. Okay. Imagine making a greetings card company and that's the thing you did, right? Like, cool. That's awesome. Like, that's good for you for mastering something so well that you were able to sell it to Hallmark, like the brand of brands when it comes to cards. Right. Yeah. But by the time he was invested in a company that I was working for, by the time I got to meet him, I shook his hand and said, "It's so great to meet you. You have a just incredible amount of experience." And he said, "Experience comes from mistakes. So I will agree. I have a great amount of experience." And that phrase stuck and it came circling back to me in that moment in my sales career. So understanding that failing should be done from a failing forward standpoint and realizing that it's not like you failed and your entire business collapse and you know, like, there's crucial failure, but failures are nothing to be consumed by and dwell on. People that are great, people that are masters of their craft, understand failure as an experience, and they are looking for solutions. They analyze the problem, don't dwell on it, and they move to the solution mindset. And how do I work on the solution and bettering this and changing this? You mentioned the EOS and the seats. I think one of the hardest things to do when an owner takes off their hat and starts giving that hat to somebody else, the reason they don't want to hand that hat off is why. They don't want to hand that hat off because, oh, I'm so good at it, I don't want to give this up. They want to hand it off because they don't want to hand it off because they're afraid the next person is going to do what? Mess it up.
Yeah.
Let them mess it up. Just set some boundaries or parameters. Like, let them think a little bit. Let them have some freedom. Let them make some decisions. Understand that mistakes are going to happen. And it, as long as it's not a mistake that is so financially ruining to your company or brand ruining, that's okay. You made those mistakes too. Let them go make their mistakes and let them learn from it. They will never be great in the seat that they're in. They'll never master the seat that they're in if they don't get to make a mistake or two. Expect some issues and some failure from your people and be ready to say, yeah, I tried that. Here's why it didn't work for me. Or, cool, I've never experienced that failure before, but let's analyze this together and have a solution to that problem. That's the big difference in that mindset. They're not afraid of it. They don't like it. Doesn't mean you're like, great, we failed today. No. You don't like it, but you have a healthy respect for it.
So in failure, you need to look for the lessons, right? So if there is failure and you're not looking to improve on that failure, then you do lose, right? Like, but if you do fail, so I this reminds me of a story of a gentleman that I met at one of the conferences who had a roofing company for about 8 years and failed. He had to shut it down. Just couldn't make it work. But I mean, 8 years is a long time of not, you know what I mean? Like, so he put in a lot of effort, left the business. Then he found content from the industry and started paying attention to it again and started hearing the conversations that were being had of other people and learned, oh, that's where I went wrong. Oh, that's where I went wrong. Oh, if I did that, it would have been different. and he started his company again. And he's you know, like, it's like
he essentially realized that he repeated the same failure over and over again.
Right. And he was missing the certain, there was a gap in knowledge, kind of back to what we were talking about earlier. It's like, you know, in always learning, right? There was a gap in knowledge. And if you fill that gap, you'll win. But sometimes you have to learn harder lessons, right? Like, yes. Some lessons need to be taught in different ways, right? Like, you know, back in 08 when the market crashed, 07, 08 when the market crashed, I learned some lessons. they were not the funnest lessons to learn, but boy, were they great lessons. They were expensive lessons, but, you know, they were great lessons. So that's, you know, all of those things along the way. Every failure you have is not, it's only moving forward. And I love what you said, the guy that started that greeting card company was, yeah, man, it's just in the amount of mistakes that you've made.
Yep.
You think about it, like, I think about like inventors, right? And scientists, right. And, you know, like, how many combinations of these chemicals did we make? Did we try before we got this? Right. And, yeah. and it's just part of what they do. They're like, oh, that one didn't work. Cool. We learned something. Let's try another thing. Then we learn a little more and then we try another thing. We learn a little more and we try another thing. Failing is part of it. Now, on the other side of that, failing in public is challenging. Mm-hmm.
Yep. It and definitely
I think
is.
That, I think that, unfortunately, social media and what we the world we live in today amplifies the kind of the challenge of moving through your failures, right?
Yeah.
But the best stories are told. The best success stories that are ever told are the ones of the failures.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, those are the best success stories.
Absolutely.
Elon Musk is firing rockets into space knowing that they're not going to make it.
Yeah.
To learn a lesson each time.
Yeah.
What? Like.
So on a small level, on a micro level, or on a company level, or a sales team level even, I think that something that should be considered is, well, here's what I would like to bring to meetings often, is to have the team ready to walk into a meeting, sales team, whole company team, you know, whatever it may be, have them come in and to tell you what their biggest success was from the last, whatever your meeting period is, the last week, the last month, whatever it is, and what their biggest issue was, their biggest challenge was, their biggest hurdle was, their biggest failure was, right? Maybe they lost a job that was a 100K job or whatever. Because when you create an environment where people are ready to come in and talk about both of those, you create an environment where everybody's comfortable talking about it, right? This fear of failing socially, this fear of peers seeing you fail, of social media recognition of failure, you know, the fear of that kind of becomes a lot lighter and starts to go away. You can almost get rid of that fear within your company culturally if you just create an environment that's open to talk about it. And here's the other benefit to that one. If I go in there and I say, great, and we start those meetings and people, the first couple of times, people are not going to tell you what their real failure was. Like, it's just not going to happen. They're not going to start there. But eventually someone is going to tell you one, and people are going to realize, I'm okay sharing a little bit deeper. And at some point, somebody's going to share something where they're like, well, I had this happen. And someone else is going to say, yeah, I've had that happen before. Here's what I did. Because there's this kind of isolation in failure where you feel like, I did this worse than anybody else has, or this is the most I could have failed, or no one else has failed this way before. And we spend a lot of time focusing in roofing companies, especially on all the wins. That's great, right? Like, we can all talk in and I got a 50,000, I got 100,000, I got 5 approved, whatever it may be, right? But you better have a team that's ready to talk about what's wrong, because in that you may be fast tracking somebody's learning curve. Now you have one person who's done it and failed, and then somebody who's like, yeah, I did it, and here's what I learned in that failure. And you have 20 other people in the room that are like, cool, we're not going to do that. Good lesson for everybody, right?
Right.
So letting the failure be kind of a open thing helps internally, And then it's going to help with the social fear of failure, whether that's just the visibility from peers or even the idea on social media and with a world we live in where information's so fast that, look, I guarantee you that failure probably goes just as fast as it came along, right? Like, you're going to have that where you feel like you're ridiculed, you're spotlight, stuff like that. But look, it's somebody else the next day. So it's amazing how quick it moves on.
It does. It just moves along. I think that kind of brings back to one of the things that we had talked about earlier, and that is this next level. Like, the first thing that I see owners do is they become obsessed with the fulfillment of their service, right? The production, the workmanship, the customer experience, things like that. The next level is creating success in others. And that's what I kind of heard in what you suggested there in creating that team culture of, hey, like, let's share our failures, right? Let's talk a little bit about that. Like, how do we build momentum in creating success in others? What are we thinking about? How should an owner think, okay, I'm there now. I know that my next mission, my bills are paid, I have a nice truck, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm good. How do I create success in others? What are your thoughts? Where do we go from here, John?
So I'm going to use my coffee mug as an example that says your comfort zone will kill you. So be cautious in those moments to not be comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, the living on the edge of your comfort zone is really where you find those challenges. And being comfortable and living your comfort zone, you will definitely experience way less failures, but you're just not going to have a lot to build on in that particular scenario. It's like, you kind of have to continue to push outside of that comfort. So again, as I said, I challenge my team, but I think that part of what the team needs to see in that situation is that things are still happening. You know, things are still moving. Things are still going. As you continue to take off all those hats, every person in those seats, every people in those roles, they need to be functional. They need to continue to embody what you built, you know, to be great, to want to master that chair, to want to master that seat, and have a comfort to talk about the failures. You know, I'm going to use you as a reference here because this is a good one. Okay. I'm going to try and circle all this together. After a year of just what in the world happened in my life for this to explode the way it did, we had the opportunity for Adam and the Pitch Pro movement and all the coaches to be on there and talk about goals for 23 and what we wanted to do, and put a big personal goal out there, put a big business goal out there. And I was able to accomplish both of those. And so when I look back on that, and I think, you know, one of the crucial pieces that came to play was you used a statement in there. I think that kind of applies to this situation. You said step one is do something. Step two is do something better. When you remove the fear of failure, you have people that are always doing, right? Mm. They're willing to do. They're willing to act. They're willing to take the step. They're willing to move. They're willing to at least do the first thing. Sink or swim, fail or not, fail or win, right? Like, fail or succeed, momentum moving forward or speed bump, whatever it may be. They understand that nothing happens without something, right? Like, you have to do something to either know that this is momentum I want to carry or that this is a failure I don't want to repeat. So step one is do something. And if that something works, then you just continue to do something better. So every individual in those seats that you have should have that same mindset. They need the mindset of step one is do something. Step two is do something better. And it's okay to fail because what I'm really tasked with is doing, right? Like doing. These people that were great, right? They continue to do over and over and over again. You know how many times we have been kicked in the teeth at NTS with a comment from an adjuster or a carrier or somebody buying their very first report and it didn't go the way they thought it was going to go. Like, they thought this was an easy button or a magic pill and stuff like that, and that this was just going to make it work, right? Now, our original do something was we just had to do it. We had to do it. I was writing these reports. I was creating this report. It was like driving a speedboat. When we made turns, we could make the fastest turns we want. We could make the quickest changes we want. We were developing a system and process. Just know that in a certain phase in the company, you go from steering a speedboat to steering a yacht. And your do somethings may not make the same waves. They may not make the same changes. It may not change as fast. It may not change as abruptly as the speedboat. It may be more like a cruise liner, right? Or a very, very big boat turns and maneuvers. So recognize that through the development and growth of the company, the do something mindset may not move the needle as much as it used to. But the benefit to that is the failure usually doesn't drop the needle back near as much as it used to as well. But if you embody that do something, then do something better concept, which thank you for that, Jim. Like, I respect you. I think you are incredible at what you do. In fact, I will say this one. People have asked me this question. John, you should do a podcast. I'm like, I don't want to. I don't think I'll be great at it. Jim, you're great at this podcast. And it's a great podcast that's been running a long time. So another thing that you are just great at, right? Like, but step one, do something. Step two, do something. And that came straight from you, from a conversation that we had when setting goals. And I think that if you build that into your team, this whole idea of failure changes, because they realize that you can't get momentum unless you do something, and you can't fail unless you do something. So step one is do something. And then step two is do something better.
Yeah. Done is better than perfect.
Yes,
this has been another, like, It's you have to do something, and there is the inaction that we take will ruin us.
The obsession with perfection can really choke execution. Okay. It can just completely destroy execution because we pursue perfection and we're like, oh, no, I don't want to do it till I can do it this way. And I'm like, but at some point, you're just not going to do it at all. Like, at what point do we move from the pursuit of perfection to just execution? Like, just do something. And it is just crippling for some. But this is, again, why I like to talk to my teams about, what did you do well? What was your biggest, where can we celebrate some momentum to show that you are doing something? Okay. And then what was your failure? Because at least failure still tells me you did something. If I'm in the meeting and somebody can't tell me a good story about the momentum or the failure, the message I'm hearing loud and clear from that individual is you just didn't do anything. You didn't do, like, go do something. Stop focusing on perfection and just worry about execution right now.
That's a great stopping point. This has been another episode of the Roofing Success Podcast. Go do something.
If you would like to generate more revenue through your digital marketing efforts, please visit roofermarketers.com to get a copy of the book, The Best Known Roofer. Also, check the training section of the website for guides on everything from running effective pay-per-click ads to how to properly set up your Google My Business listing. Thanks for listening.